Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest is both a thinker and a fighter. David Crist is a senior historian with the Defense Department with a new book about the U.S. and Iran. He has a doctorate in Middle East history, but he also fought in the First Gulf War, made two tours of duty with special forces in Iraq and Afghanistan, and was among the first Americans to arrive to overthrow the Taliban. His father, George Crist, was a CENTCOM commander, and in David Crist's new book, he reveals many things, including secret negotiations between Iran and the United States after 9/11 toward a grand bargain for peace, which he says the Bush administration turned down, and he warns of the U.S. blundering its way into a war with Iran today. The book is called The Twilight War, The Secret History of America's 30-Year Conflict with Iran. Dr. Crist, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
Can you begin with those secret negotiations between the U.S. and Iran after 9/11? Who called who?
Well, actually, the Iranians reach out to the United States. They had no great love for the Taliban. The Taliban, a few years earlier, had killed a number of Iranian diplomats that nearly led to a war between the two countries. And after 9/11, I think most of the Iranian government, although I think they thought the U.S. somehow got what it deserved just out of a basic dislike for the United States, but overall thought there was a confluence of interest between the two countries, and also had no great love for either the Taliban or al-Qaeda. So they reached out to the United States through a set of opening talks that were going on in Geneva, and essentially offered to cooperate with the United States on a number of issues, including allowing the U.S. to use bases in Iran to support our invasion forces. It culminated in the establishment of the new government in Afghanistan, which President Karzai won, and Iran was a key factor in establishing the new Afghan government. After that, there was as the U.S. geared up for the invasion of Iraq, Iran reaches out again, hoping to establish a similar rapport or similar relationship between the two countries over Iraq. Again, Saddam Hussein fought an 8-year war with the Iranians, so he is not on their one of their favorite dictators in the world.
Right.
And in this case, the U.S. Basically spurred them. They end up through a number of means, the most famous of which is this fax that comes in from the Swiss ambassador, essentially outline a series of points of essentially any major issue the U.S. would like to discuss with them, from their support of terrorism to Hezbollah, and in return they ask for what amounts to a recognition of their right and respect for Iran as a major regional power.
And the United States wasn't willing to give that? Did the nuclear program have anything to do with it?
At the time, the nuclear program was not a major factor. That won't, while it was of concern to the United States, because we knew they were doing covert weapons development, the main issue was a fundamental belief within at least large parts of the Bush administration at the time that that by engaging with the Iranians in any official capacity, it essentially gave credence to this regime. And the object of U.S. policy should be regime change, and that anything we do would essentially undercut our efforts to delegitimize the regime. So but talking to them would be counterproductive to our long-term goals.
Regime change here, regime change there. You go all the way back to the overthrow of the Shah by the Ayatollah's revolution in 1979, and say the U.S. had a plan to invade Iran after the Shah fell. What was the plan, and why was it never carried out?
Well, the plan was based upon—the Shah had been a sort of the bulwark of U.S. policy in the region. They were the ones who safeguard Persian, or he was the one who safeguarded Persian Gulf oil from the Soviet Union. When he falls, it creates a vacuum, at least in the minds of Washington. So the prospect, at least, Soviets may try to take advantage of either the revolution, either the instability it might create, or maybe they would try to get a Soviet-installed government, a proxy there. Any one of these things may lead to the Soviet takeover of Iran, which would then threaten what Carter's National Security Advisor Brzezinski termed the Achilles heel of the West, which was the oil. So the U.S. developed a counter plan, invasion plan that was really pretty robust, special operations, considering using nuclear weapons, all whole sorts of things to try to prevent the Soviets from taking over Iran.
By the way, your book title refers to America's 30-year conflict with Iran, but isn't it really 60 years? The U.S. was involved in the coup that installed the Shah in the first place in the 1950s, overthrowing the Mossadegh regime. For many, that's kind of the original sin of U.S.-Iran relations.
Yeah, well, certainly from the Iranian perspective, you are absolutely correct. They look that as look on that as sort of the beginning of the downturn between relations. Up to that point, the U.S. had actually been pretty stridently opposed to British colonialism in the region, which would have ingratiated us to a lot of the moderates or the Mossadegh supporters in Iran. I cut it off in 1979 simply because there's just it's a lot of history, and that's a very pivotal point. That the downfall of the Shah really puts us on the road to where we are to today, which is a period of prolonged antagonism of almost a quasi-war.
Did you say, by the way, why the Carter administration never pulled the trigger on that invasion plan for once the Shah fell?
Well, there was a couple of reasons. One is, as I started looking at, there was the big reason ultimately was the Soviets never succeeded in establishing any sort of toehold in Iran. In fact, Ayatollah Khomeini, who comes to power with the current Islamic Republic, is as anti-communist as they are anti-Western. So, and in fact, that threat slowly abates over time. And after the Soviet Union gets bogged down in Afghanistan, it's pretty obvious they're not going to invade Iran short of a World War III scenario. So there's no need to pull the trigger.
Pentagon historian David Crist, my guest. His book, The Twilight War, The Secret History of America's 30-Year Conflict with Iran. Turning to the present, you have said you are concerned the U.S. might blunder its way into a war with Iran. What's your scenario for blundering our way into a war?
Unfortunately, there's a lot of potential problems that could lead to that. The main one, I think, is the potential for a miscalculation in the Gulf. And I trace this out in the book, all the way back even into the 1990s, there have been a series of incidents between U.S. warships and these fast speedboats the Revolutionary Guard, the Iranians, operate from. They've done a series of mock attacks on warships. I wouldn't say a daily occurrence, but it happens fairly frequently. In one case in 2008, they dropped garbage out of the back of one of the boats in the path of one of our warships, which easily could have been mistaken for mines or something. Any one of these incidents could easily lead to a shooting war. Two ships misunderstand. We think it's a real attack. The Iranians are just tweaking our nose. Leads to a shootout in the Gulf. We have no diplomatic relations with the Iranians. Last year, the Iranians rejected an offer to establish a hotline between our two navies to prevent any incident like this from escalating. So miscalculation could easily creep into this. By the time we get diplomatic notes back and forth, it's going to be too late. And so that's where I'm concerned about this potential for miscalculation.
We're in a presidential election year, in case you haven't noticed. Do you think the campaign season puts it at any more risk or less risk of a war beginning soon?
I don't think the campaign season figures into it too prominently, especially from the Iranians' perspective. I think they don't see much difference between either candidate. So whether President Obama's reelected or not, from their perspective, it's a continuous U.S. policy. And in fact, I don't think that no matter who wins the next election, You know, this is really not a Republican or Democratic issue. I know it's heresy to say, sitting here in Washington under an election year, to say that, but it's really not. This is an overarching American issue, and so I think no matter whether it's President Obama or President Romney, either one's going to be faced with the same problem, and will probably adapt very similar strategies for Iran.
You think? Well, Mitt Romney is leaving on an international campaign swing and took a parting shot at the president yesterday on an issue relevant to Iran, the apparent leaks of classified information revealing that the U.S. was responsible for the Stuxnet computer virus launched against the Iranian nuclear program. Here's about 40 seconds of Governor Romney yesterday.
It's reported that Bob Gates, the president's first secretary of defense, bluntly addressed another security problem within this administration. After secret operational details of the Bin Laden raid were given to reporters, Secretary Gates walked into the West Wing and told the Obama team to shut up. And he added a colorful word for emphasis. Lives of American servicemen and women are at stake. But astonishingly, the administration failed to change its ways. More top secret operations were leaked, even some involving covert action going on in Iran.
Governor Romney yesterday. David, Chris, I'm curious about your take on the importance of Stuxnet and whether it's a threat in any way that this information was released.
Well, I don't have any firsthand knowledge on the Stuxnet virus as far as whether it came from the U.S. as Israel. What I'm reading is the same thing that's appearing in the newspapers. I'm not a fan of leaking these sorts of operational details. If that's true, I think that is extremely harmful. There's a time and place for information to come out. As a historian, I firmly believe that. And you can certainly reveal way too much detail too soon, and it does put people's lives on the line. I think it appears at least that there is some kind of a low-level war going on with the Iranians, leased by the Israelis. It would come as no surprise whether, that this Stuxnet or whatever else may be out there is in keeping with what amounts to sort of a quasi-war that's being waged to stop their nuclear program. And the flip side of that is I think the terrorist attack in Bulgaria is probably Iran's response to it.
Really? So last thing, based on your extensive knowledge of U.S.-Iranian relations, do you think there's any other way than war or a credible threat of war to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons?
Well, I think there's always room for diplomacy. I think the current view that the current tack the president's taken about negotiations is the correct one. I think talk is usually better than fight, as they say. And there's still time for diplomacy to work. So it's my preferred course rather than a conflict.
David Crist, Pentagon historian and author now of The Twilight War, The Secret History of America's 30-Year Conflict with Iran. This is 600-plus pages of fascinating reading. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, with the death of the actor Sherman Hemsley, we will invite callers who see your own families in the story of the Jeffersons or defined your family in some way against the narrative of the Jeffersons. Give us a call right now if that sounds like you on either side of that, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll also talk to Michael Eric Dyson about the legacy of the Jeffersons coming up next.